Really. Then we took off when you take off at night in France. all you've got is a searchlight, mm-hmm. no flares at all. And you got the red light at the end of the airdrome, you know, you got the off the air by off the ground by then. So
follow the rivers, wouldn't you?
Navigation would be what?
Oh yes, that's another thing. There's the we had that we go fly, take off and get to about 1,000 feet, and then they look around and then we go by lighthouses, flashing different letters, you see. And one we went by was what we called L, dot, dash, dot, dot. Keeps repeating that, dot, dash, dot, dot. And we fly over that, about get to about 3,000 feet, about 2,000 or 3,000 feet. And then look around again, and now next one was 22. That's dash, dash, dot, dot, we call 22. And get there, and then you got a compass bearing and go from then. But from that place, we could see the river some. On the darkest night, you could all see a river, see water. And then we'd fly, take our bearings from the river some, or from the last lighthouse.
What did you look for, the Ellery lines? And
what
did you look for?
Well, you could all see the firing line at night. You could all see the...
And your objectives usually, were they cities or...
No. Never cities. No, never any cities. All the military. And this time during the Germans' retreat, the final push, we were concentrate on bridges mm-hmm. across the Somme or across rivers to halt the retreat.
What kind of bomb sites, I guess we'd call them, would you have?
No, we had no bomb sites.
None at all? Just a toggle switch to let them go?
It wasn't what you call a toggle switch, it was a cable. Pull a cable for each bomb.
And each bomb had a
cable.
Yeah. Now would your observer do that or would you do that?
No, pilot. I'd do that.
The pilot let the bombs go?
Yeah. But how they go, was it when you perhaps see a picture of the FE-2B, I looked down, the observer sat down here in front of me, and right as his nose touches the objective, at 3,000 feet, you let the bomb go and that get close, if not on it.
Now, would you let them all go at once, or would you make repeated turns and one at a time, or...?
One at a time. Mostly one at a time.
Now, would you come over as a flight and do this?
No.
Individual?
You couldn't go flight at night. That's too dangerous.
So it would be strictly individual?
Individual flight. Yep.
By the seat of your pants, I guess, is the best.
That's right, it was. Yes. Yeah. That was just right.
And so you had, 3 hours?
Yeah, to be there and back within 3 hours.
There and back within 3 hours.
Yep.
And?
Some nights you go over twice.
You'd come back, refuel, rebomb, and
yep.
and go again, and try and go for two night rounds.
Yes.
My goodness.
Yes, I remember we carried these 1,220-pound bombs, I think it was. Oh, we carried one big one.
Mm-hmm.
We had about a ton, I suppose. It got under the fuselage. It won at least that bomb.
Rock when they left.
I'd never forget taking off that first little big heavy bomb. And the night was still, there wasn't a breath of wind. And we made for that, got right in front of the searchlight. He's right behind me, beam shot down the airport. And of course I made for the red light at the end of the the flight path. And I thought it wasn't going to take off. No sign of it leaving the ground. So finally we got the red light, I got off the ground, and the right wingtip hit the light. And I saw the man in charge duck down, hit the ground flat, and knocked the light over. And of course that buckled the end of my wingtip. But I was in the air anyway. All I could do was circle around and come down again.
With the bombs still on?
Now in bombing, a bomb released a bomb has to go through the air a certain distance. You see, in the tip of a bomb there's a propeller.
Mm-hmm.
And the force of the air, the bomb dropping through the air, rotates this propeller until eventually it rotates the detonator in place.
Right.
And then the bomb strikes the objective and
explodes. Well, you carried these, what was the name you gave these large heavy bombs? Do you have a nickname for them at all, or? Doesn't matter. Did you dread taking these ones up on flights? Would you prefer the smaller bombs?
Oh, I don't remember. There wasn't much difference in weight, I don't think. All the small bombs and the big bomb.
What was it like when you let the big one go?
Oh, feel it lift. Right.
The whole plane would just shake and lift up in the air, or what?
Oh no, it wouldn't lift up in the air, just
shook.
Oh, I suppose it would feel different, you feel lighter. The controller would be what's heavy, and heavy on the control. It'd be lighter.
Well, what do these things look like when they hit? What do they look like when they hit the ground? These bombs, how do they appear from the air?
Oh, it's just a big explosion. Of course, mind you, at night bombing we didn't fly very high.
Maybe, what, about 2,000, 3,000 feet?
3,000 feet, mostly.
3,000
around
feet.
The
bombing really wasn't a refined art, as in the Second War. The bombing was more of a hit-and-miss type of proposition then?
Oh, yes. Sure it was. Mm-hmm. We had many hits, though.
Why, because you were coming in so low?
I suppose. But then we got to consider the machine gun fire. You see, machine guns are always traceable. You can see them coming for you from the ground and from other planes. Often we pass a German plane on the way over our side, and we knew he was there, but he knew it because he fired at us. Take a shot at him, we take a shot back at him. And you can see the trace of bullets going close to him, I suppose.
Take a pause here from turn the tape back on. Were there many German night fighters giving you any difficulty then? Or?
Oh, no, the German, they come over our side and bomb our side, I suppose. No, there was no difficulty in flying with the Germans. It always amazed me how, because we always flew over with navigation lights on our side until we got to the line, to the firing line. You could always see the firing line right along the line of it, continuous fire. Got to the firing line and we'd put our lights out and fly over the German side without lights. But they catch you in searchlights.
Was it hard to get out of this, of the cone of lights?
Well, out of one searchlight, that's not hard. You can always sideslip into it. They lose you, 10 to 1. But if you get two, three searchlights on at the same time, it's hard to get away from.
And then I gather the anti-aircraft fire would concentrate on you.
Yes, they'd concentrate on you then. And
well, what type of targets is what I'm trying to get? I guess I'm trying to figure out here. Military targets, would you be going for
yes.
Rear guard, headquarters type thing?
Headquarters, ammunition dumps and things like that.
Now, were the casualties very heavy in night bombers?
Well, I suppose for the number of night bombers there, you'd say they were heavy. I lost one or two good friends from the same headroom.
What about machinery, your plane packing in? Would you have troubles with the engine seizing up and things like that?
No, we had the Beardmore engine or the Rolls Royce. They were no trouble at all.
Well, not like the Hispano-Suiza then?
No, Hispano-Suiza was... No, I knew it, that was SE-5s.
Mm-hmm.
I never flew a Hispano-Suiza. The Beardmore engine, what I flew, it was a six-cylinder engine. It had a water cooled to a thin quarter, thin copper water jacket.
Mm-hmm.
And it had a large stroke, large bore, and three cylinders and two carburetors. Each carburetor feeding three cylinders.
This would be what, two engine plane, is that right?
Hmm?
This multi-engine, is that correct?
No.
No, just single engine.
One six-cylinder engine.
Just the one six-cylinder engine.
Yeah.
And I'm having difficulty visualizing this plane, I don't know why. And the prop would be where?
At the back.
And the prop's at the back.
Yeah.
That's why. That's right too. And then the bombs would be what, right underneath the fuselage or?
Yeah. Bombs under the four, one bomb rack's under the fuselage and one under each wing.
One under each wing as well.
Yeah.
What about communications? You mentioned you had an earpiece.
Yeah, that was just between the pilot and myself, and rather the pilot and the observer.
How would you communicate with the ground?
We couldn't.
You couldn't?
Well, we had a wire cable, lower a cable down, and had the key for
message. What, they would hang on the other end, or what? Wireless type trans?
Wireless, they couldn't talk. Just Morse code.
Did you get Morse code a message?
Yes, could do, but I never did, I don't think. I remember.
Wouldn't be too profitable, eh?
No.
You wouldn't have parachutes as well, is that correct?
No parachutes.
Were you of the opinion that, or one, did you even know about parachutes then, or?
No, nobody had parachutes, only balloons, kite balloons, observation balloons.
Mm-hmm.
They had parachutes.
Was there any call for them, or?
I don't remember there was, no, I don't think so.
So your equipment was pretty good, I gather. You felt the tire.
Oh, yes.
You had good equipment.
The engine was good. It's quite smooth.
Now the bombs worked, I gather, is that right?
Oh, yes.
They worked well.
Mm-hmm.
And, I guess by the time you got into it, these things had been pretty well refined, is that correct?
Oh, yes. The bombs, you mean?
Yes. I was thinking of the bombs and the, the weapon systems and anything else. You didn't have built-in machine guns or anything like a fighter, though, eh?
Not like a fighter. Fighter had a built-in machine gun. At that time, in 1918, they had the machine gun synchronized with the propeller.
Mm-hmm.
Fire tool before.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, we just had the Lewis gun in front. The engine was behind.
Mm-hmm.
The pole was behind. That's why these pushers, they are dangerous things to land badly. If you get a bad landing, just look the undercarriage, the engine is behind you.
And just keep coming forward, I guess.
Sure. So, there's one or two men killed like that. In England, even.
But they would have a bad landing and the engine...
Bad landing if they buckled down the carriage while the engine still coming.
And the engine just kept going right through them, I guess, eh?
Mm-hmm.
How about control of the plane and flying the plane? Was it a very responsive plane?
Oh, yes. Yeah, the... All Michelle flying, the theory of flight was all the same.
Mm-hmm.
We had joystick like, and it's going to like a right angler, mm-hmm. a triangle at the top, and you had the control, engine control on the joystick. Mm-hmm. But on the last flight I had over France, our objective was to bomb the bridges over the Somme, I think, checking Germans' retreat, and I got a lot of searchlights and machine gun fire and what they call flaming onions. And big balls of flame come up at you, twos and threes.
Mm.
And anyway, on this particular night, the nothing happened to either of us, but the engine, the own plane started to vibrate, a light vibration, and then it got heavier and heavier. Then we had about one or two bombs left, and I knew something wasn't right, so I dropped those bombs at random and turned for home. And all the time, flying home, the vibration was getting heavier and heavier, until finally, she quit and burst into flames, the engine.
Your engine impacted in, eh?
The engine behind me, of course, you know.
Well, that would be safer then, I guess, in that sense, would it not?
Well, it would, as long as, don't forget, the whole construction, the whole construction of the tailplane was not metal, it was all bamboo.
Bamboo.
So you had to study those things, and of course 3,000 feet wasn't very high, and you could sidestep and get the flames away from you. But you couldn't do that too much until we got down, and then the observer started dropping parachute flares. There was a tube in the bottom of the cockpit, and he pushed these little tubes, these flares down, and they'd open the parachute and let the ground up.
Were you looking for a place to emergency landing?
Yeah. But then the question emergency landing was a puzzle, because it's a mass of shell holes.
Artillery barrages.
Artillery barrages and things like that. So even the last thing I remember on that flight was the vibrations. I don't remember a thing to this day of hitting the ground, or a thing after it. Next thing I remember was a month later. A month later I was being carried on a stretcher down the gangway to a ship. I was shot down the 1st of September 1918, and this is about the 3rd of October. When I got these semi-conscious.
Where did they keep you?
Well, in the ship, I was down in the cabin in a cot. Rails each side of us.
Uh-huh. What, taken back to England, I guess?
Taken back to England.
Well, for the month you've been, what,
I'd been in Rouen. Rouen Hospital in Rouen.
And you don't recall a thing?
No. Not in hospital.
Did your observer get out okay as well?
Yes. Yes, he got off better than me, I think. In fact, I was, when the plane hit the ground, the report goes that I was caught in the wiring, a foot caught. But the observer came back and pulled me out, cleared me and pulled me away. I was unconscious all this. So how true that is, I don't know.
And what, in the plane, would what then? Burn up with the gasoline.
Oh, plane was ruined.
And then you were shipped back to England, and well, you'd have a rehabilitation.
A month later, shipped back to London. I was in London Hospital for a week or so, and then I was sent to convalescent in Surrey, Haslemere, Surrey. At General Markham's house, I think it was a big house.
You didn't get burned at all, did you?
Oh, no. No. Neither was a burn.
It's incredible, isn't it?
It's medical.
And then by the time you'd convalesced, I guess the war had ended, is that correct?
The war finished while I was in hospital, yes. In London Hospital. Because I remember they told me the riot there. Noise that's going on outside.
Mm-hmm. Now you left the did you leave the RAF after this, or did you go back to the other regiment, or what?
No.
Was the...
Oh no, I was unfit for further service. I was discharged. Unfit for further service in 1918, December. So I went home.
And then to what, pursue a...
I didn't do a thing for 6 months. I just rested, stayed home.
How did that feel? Pretty good?
Did very good. Did. Although, mind you, I wasn't very bright. I was unconscious for a long, long time.
Then you came to Canada after this, is that right? Or when did you come to Canada?
Came to Canada in 1922. The whole family came. My father and mother and two sisters, myself.
And where did you settle at?
We came to Leduc in Alberta.
Leduc, Alberta. The great oil field. So.
Yeah, I was going farming there. But then my brother-in-law had a farm and we went there first. And I stayed on the farm for about a week or two, and I thought, no, not for me.
Not for you, eh?
So the radio was coming in then, about 1922. I tried my look at selling radios. Couldn't get to first base then. Very good friend, a bank manager in Leduc. He got me a job in the bank as a junior. I was 24. But I took it. Very glad I did. I was moved from there, Leduc, to Medicine Hat. Then Medicine Hat to Lethbridge. Lethbridge to Edmonton. In Edmonton, I stayed there until the Royal Bank. I was in the Union Bank then. Union Bank of Canada.
Mm-hmm.
Then the Royal Bank took over the Union Bank in about 1926, I think it was. And the manager advised me to find another job. I was too old to do much in the bank. So I'd already applied for a job with the civil service, provincial civil service, Alberta. And I got a job there within a week or two. And I worked then at Pinoca.
Mm-hmm.
Pinoca is a mental hospital there. And I had a job there in a bookkeeping, accounting, collection, correspondence.
So you ended up in Edmonton at the Armories there or something, didn't you, during the Second War?
Yes, during the Second War. In the Second War, no, I was in, still working at Pinoca.
Mm-hmm.
And I applied to the armies. I was quite acquainted with everybody in the armies through my militia experience. Of course, they took me on right away, and I was sent to Calgary for a course, for a refresher course. And so I had the commission then too.
So this be what the Canadian Army said, correct?
Yeah. And then I went to basic training center, training recruits. Had a good sergeant there. And recruits came for about 1 month, was it? Then it's time to train them.
So what, you finished the war out as
the Second War?
The Second War, yeah.
Oh no, the Second War, Canadian Military District 13 wanted to know why this officer was an A1 officer and still getting a pension from the RAF. So then they had to go for a medical board and confess that I was getting a pension, and they had to let me out.
They let you out, did you?
Before the war ended. I was out in June 1943. About June 1943. Yep. Then my wife and I just had to come out to Victoria. So I came to Victoria and found a job, different jobs here, with the shipbuilding. I actually got back into the Federal Civil Servants Service. And there I stayed until I was 65.
Hmm. Well, thank you very much.
I think that's, I hope Ralph, you haven't wasted time.
No, I think it's pretty good. We've got a nice synopsis right across the board.
Oh, I'm very pleased to hear it.
Thank you very much,
sir. I don't talk very clearly.
No, we got it all picked up. Thank you.